This is the worst movie we've ever watched on the show, hands down. And I will defend that statement with my dying breath, because this is terrible. If the only thing you felt wrong with this movie was that he redeemed himself at the end, I don't know if I want to do a podcast with you. This is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. It angered me to a point where I was really considering turning this movie off and just not watching it and just pretending I watched it for the show.
Junk food dinner from the vault. The JFD boys are taking a week off from watching movies. Instead, we've resurrected three memorable movie discussions from past shows. We'll revisit The Last American Virgin, Total Recall, and Gutterballs.
This film was written by a teacher.
And now let's all get serious. Hey, you pervert! Get out of my... Come on, move! Dance all night, play all day. 1, 2, 3! Don't let love you get in the way. Dance all night, keep the beat. Hi.
Now you two have fun.
Virgin, featuring songs by Blondie, The Cars, Devo, Journey, The Police, REO Speedwagon, Tommy Two Tone, and more. The Last American Virgin. See it or be it.
Yeah. Shake it up.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 94. The first film we're going to be taking a look at tonight is The Last American Virgin from 1982. This is a classic kind of coming-of-age sex comedy. This is actually a remake of an Israeli film called Eskimo Lemon, or The Lemon Popsicle, which is currently available on Netflix. Watch instantly if you are interested in checking it out. I actually watched this, The Lemon Popsicle, on Netflix this weekend, just to kind of compare and see how it relates to The Last American Virgin, because this is a movie. The Last American Virgin is a movie that I've seen many times and enjoy, so I wanted to see the movie that it was based on. And it is, Last American Virgin is a pretty faithful remake of the Lemon Popsicle. It's like there's several scenes that are almost shot for shot remade in this movie, a lot of situations. The difference being, obviously, that it's an Israeli film, but the Lemon Popsicle takes place in the 50s, where this is set strictly in the 80s. The Last American Virgin tells the tale of a young man named Gary, played by Lawrence Monoson, who is, along with his two other friends, Rick and David, played by Steve Anton and Joe Rubo, respectively, trying to, you know, kind of figure the ladies out, trying to figure out, you know, their sexuality, trying to score with babes, and, you know, failing miserably in the process. The movie starts off with the boys picking up a trio of dopey high school girls. They bring them back to Gary's parents' place under the guise that they have cocaine, which they produce a mirror with sweet and low lines on it, which the girls happily snort up and proclaim the best shit they've ever snorted in their life. This leads to, you know, some make-out sessions and some hilarious antics when Gary's parents come home to find a house full of naked broads. Throughout the movie, Gary has become infatuated with Karen, a girl at his school, played by Diane Franklin, who you'll remember as the new wave punk daughter from Terror Vision, as well as one of the princesses from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Always cute, always a delight to see on the screen, and it's easy to see why Gary falls head over heels for her. Unfortunately, she's not too into him. She's more into his buddy Rick, again played by Steve Antin, who you probably remember him most as Troy from The Goonies. But he recently directed that terrible Cher, Christina Aguilera movie Burlesque. So, you know, he's keeping busy. So Diane Franklin starts dating Rick. The boys continue to have various sexual adventures, including visiting a horny Spanish woman and a grumpy prostitute. Meanwhile, Rick and Karen's relationship evolves, and Gary becomes more and more heartbroken. This movie is a lot of fun. It's very much in the style of a lot of the classic 80s kind of sex comedies that kind of came afterwards. This came out just mere months after Porky's, and I feel like these two kind of rode the crest of the 80s teen comedies. I mean, after this, we'd see a lot of stuff, you know, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which is also, I think, very similar. You know, you've got the Screwballs and the Hard Bodies and all the classic, you know, Revenge of the Nerds, 80s teen sex comedies. This one is packed wall to wall with 80s music. A lot of recognizable 80s hits play pretty much throughout the entire movie, sometimes repeating over and over again. This is kind of in the style of the Lemon Popsicle, which was wall to wall with 50s hits. This one has, you know, tunes from The Cars and Blondie and The Police. And I want to know, if someone can give me a running tally of how many fucking 80s movies had that Waitresses, I Know What Boys Like song in it, because it seems like it's just in fucking every 80s movie that I watch, that song pops up. So if anyone has like a list of every movie that fucking song is featured in, be interested to see. But I mean, it's always good to hear, but Jesus Christ. I don't think I would ever have heard that song if it wasn't for 80s sex comedies. But I do have to address the ending of this movie. So if you have not seen this movie and want to see this movie and want to have the ending spoil-free, you might want to pause and fast-forward a little bit, because there's a key thing that happens at the ending of this movie that we have to talk about. But if you don't want the movie spoiled, go ahead and fast-forward a little bit. So, spoiler alert, at the end of this movie, Karen gets pregnant from Rick, and of course Rick is a dickhead about it. He doesn't want to deal with it. So of course Gary swoops in and you know, takes this as his chance to kind of get in with Karen. So he helps her pay for an abortion. He busts his ass. He sets her up in his grandma's house, which is now abandoned, as a place to kind of recover after the abortion. Plus the abortion scene is one of the most just kind of just heart-wrenching things you've ever seen. But as bad as that is, the ending of this movie is like one of the most classic downer endings of all time. You know, after the abortion, Gary thinks he and Karen are kind of in it. You know, they've kind of had this, you know, touching experience together, and they've kind of bonded over this. So he thinks, you know, all good. And then, of course, the very end of the movie, find out that Karen is back with Rick, breaking poor Gary's heart. And then credits roll. A lot of people hate this ending. They think it's a real bummer. They wish that, you know, Gary and Karen would have finally gotten together for the nice happy ending that I think everybody was expecting. But I personally think this ending is fucking perfect, because it's so true to life. If anybody has ever been considered a nice guy, you know that the ladies, They shit all over you. So don't be a nice dude. Ladies hate it. They love the dickheads. They love the Ricks in life. And so while this has a bummer ending, I think it is the most truthful ending this movie could have had, because it's just the way the ladies operate. But anyway, I love this movie a lot. I've seen it a bunch of times. It's one of the very first canon movies. Like I said, it's a remake of The Lemon Popsicle, which was an original Israeli canon movie before they moved over here to the United States. I think it came out in 1978, The Lemon Popsicle, and then this came out in 1982. So The Lemon Popsicle was a huge success in Israel for Golden Globus. It had like 6 sequels. It was a ridiculous runaway hit, so they decided to see if they could recapture that magic for their new American audience. And I think this movie is a lot of fun. I think it's got a good cast. I think all the young actors in it are great. I think it's got, you know, lots of classic 80s music in it, a lot of great hijinks. So if you like the Porky's, you like the Revenge of the Nerds kind of stuff, I think you'd be right at home with Last American Virgin. But I'm excited to find out what you guys thought of this movie.
I think this movie has more to do with something like Taxi Driver and Big Fan than it does with Hard Bodies and Porky's and stuff like this. To say that, you know, the nice guy doesn't get the girl in this movie is I feel a little disingenuous. There's nothing nice about this fucking creep. He's a total asshole. He sees this girl one time, smiles at her at a restaurant, and then from there he's just a stalker. He goes to her house and lets all the air out of her bicycle tires. That way he has to give her a ride to work. His friend starts dating her, and the whole time he just sulks about it and gets mad, and, you know, he gives attitude to everybody, and he's just fucking upset. The whole time while he's pining after this chick, this nice guy pining after this chick, he's fucking hookers in an alley. So not exactly the nicest guy. A real weird bipolar type, this guy. He punches his friend because, you know, near the end, the friend, like, dumps the girl because she gets pregnant. And, you know, like, the guy's like, oh, she's a whore anyway. She's a slut. And the guy's like, you know, and the creep guy, the Ted Mosby of this movie, is like, you take it back. I'm going to punch you. And he's sticking up for this girl's honor, to, like, being all chivalrous, despite the fact that he, like, gang raped an old Spanish lady and fucked a hooker in an alley. Like, real bipolar complex guy here. And yeah, total creep, this fucking guy. Total creep. And his plan at the end, I don't understand how he thought it would benefit him at all. Like, also, to go back to the creepiness before I get into his plan, he lets her stay at his house after the abortion and she falls asleep reading a book. He goes in there and, like, starts touching her belly skin for a while like a fucking animal.
Were the baby in there?
Not at that point, I don't think there was.
He could smell it.
So the guy's, you know, a total creep with these playful secrets of his. And then, to go back to the plan, like, you know, the girl gets pregnant. You know, the guy, well, the Ted Mosby, I forget his name.
Gary.
He was also the guy with the porno movie from Jason Part 4, by the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a real creep. He stops talking to the girl and he stops talking to his friend because the friend has sex, you know, with this girl, you know, just, and it tears him all up inside. He can't handle it because he's a bipolar freak. You know, his plan to get this chick after finding out that the guy dumped him because she got pregnant is, to give her an abortion. Like, I don't understand his logic where he's like, oh, the problem, with these two's relationship, the reason they broke up is because she's pregnant. I'll get rid of that pregnancy and then she'll be mine. No, you're just going to make it better for the fucking dude. Like, that's what the dude wants. That's the whole reason that he's not with the chick. It's because she's pregnant. So if you get rid of that pregnancy, of course, he's going to be like, oh, problem solved. Thanks, buddy. Pat on the back. And you're going to have to ride home alone, crying while the credits roll like a creep. This guy's a real Travis Bickle. There's nothing enjoyable about him. Like, no point do you root for him. He's just a fucking creep throughout the whole entire movie. But aside from that, I have a few other notes. Well, I'll talk about that stuff later. I want to hear what Mark has to say about this movie.
I was on Kevin's side and thinking that this was just like a romp, but you sold me. This guy's a creep.
This guy's a real villain.
Well, I do agree. I mean, he is not a very sympathetic character because he is kind of a whiny bitch throughout this movie. The one thing that I think frustrated me most about him is, you know, he's pining after this Karen chick who obviously has no fucking interest in him whatsoever. And the whole time, he's being pursued by this chick Rose, who if it was me, that's who I would have gone for. I mean, I know she was kind of nerdy, mm-hmm. but she had like that pink streak in her hair, and she was like down for anything, and she seemed like a lot of fun. So like, if I would have been this Gary guy, I would have said, "Yeah, fuck you, Karen. I'm going for the nerdy Rose. She seemed like my cup of tea."
Yeah, she was way foxier.
Yeah.
But yeah. Some other stuff about this movie. It seems this movie, despite the fact that it's set in the 80s, it seems like the 50s. Like there are like these like real uptight like socialite parents. And that, I don't think that happened in the early 80s. I think that's more of a 50s thing where like people had dinner parties and were like all snooty. Also all the locker room scenes, that doesn't seem to be really 80s. It's more of a 50s thing. They get crabs, which seems more of like a 50s thing. It seems like if this was the 80s and they got an STD, they'd be like, oh no, you know, I got gonorrhea or AIDS or something rather than crabs. It seems like such a cute little 50s STD.
Yeah.
And then of course, all the repressed homosexuality that's in this, that is rampant throughout this movie.
That all has a lot to do with the fact that this was remade from a movie that was set in the 50s, because all those scenes you described are scene for scene from the original Lemon Popsicle. So I think that that's a very valid point.
Yeah, once you mention that, then pieces fit into place on that note.
Yeah.
But there's a scene in this movie where everybody gets together in a locker room and they measure each other's penises. And then the winner of the penis measuring contest, like the guy with the biggest peen, they pour a bunch of water on him, get him soaking wet, and start hugging him. That's his reward.
Well, you know who was, the guy with the biggest penis? That was Scuzz from Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Delightful. I'm proud of him, then. Too bad they didn't get him soaking wet and hug him nakedly in Return of the Living Dead.
Nakedly.
Also, you know, this the main kid, Gary, he goes to the Spanish broad's house to deliver a pizza, and she's all hitting on him, and she's like, you know, I really want to do sex to you. You should, you know, but he's like, oh, well, you know, I got to go because I got to deliver some pizzas or whatever. She's like, come back anytime. And then he comes back with his friends. Right. That way they can all have a lot of sex together. And then he proceeds to watch his friends have sex with this broad that he could have just had sex with by himself. And then him and like the fat kid, they're watching the one guy have sex with the Spanish chick while chanting like, he's fucking her, he's doing her, yeah, this is great. And a lot of repressed homosexuality in this. A lot of weird stuff going on. Yeah, but I mean, on the whole, like I said, like this movie feels more like a real creep movie. It feels sort of like a prototype to like a Judd Apatow, where like the first half of the movie is like real wacky, kind of raunchy comedy, and then the last half is just people dealing with emotions and crying.
Yeah, I mean, you really turned me around on this. I was like, yeah, it's pretty funny, and like. Some like goofy songs, and Kimmy Robertson's in it, and I like her, and like these babes are all real cute, and yeah, no.
I'm glad I could help out.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this movie made me really uncomfortable. I mean, this guy was like such an asshole.
Yeah, it was quite an argument you presented.
I'm on the debate team.
Well, I'm sure on the debate team, you guys all have to measure your penises, too.
The winner gets soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do, you know, I agree that there are a lot of kind of weird things about this movie. But I think there's a lot of scenes in this that are kind of classic 80s sex rom stuff. Like that, the first, 10, 15 minutes of this movie where they bring those three girls back to Gary's parents' place. I think that scene's a lot of fun. You got naked chicks running around. I love the one chick, Roxanne, that Rick's making out with. Is every time she like kisses him, she asks him to stop, but only kisses him more passionately with every protest, which I think is very amusing.
I was on bored with that whole opening scene. I was like, this is fun, you know, fun sex comedy romp. And then Gary, you know, I should have seen the warning signs on the horizon here. Gary, like, he's hanging out with the fat chick, and the fat chick's like eating chips and like ignoring him, And the whole time he's like just like trying to get her bra off and taking her clothes off. Like she's like totally oblivious, and like he basically rapes this girl. Thank God that his parents walked in and stopped this from happening.
I think you're reading too much into this. I don't think any of Gary's motives are as sinister as you make them out to be. I think he's just trying to discover his sexuality and failing miserably along the way. I mean, weren't you ever a young dude?
Have you ever like taken a girl's shirt and bra off while she just like sits there eating chips, like not talking to you and like not saying anything? Like that's a creep move.
Yeah, but she wasn't like protesting either. I think
what kind of chips are they?
They look like pretty normal chips, like some unsalted tortilla chips.
Oh, then no.
I think that was just. But yeah, I think that was the whole joke. Cause like, you know, he asked her to dance and she's like, I don't care, you know, and like he tries to talk to her. So like, I think the whole joke is like this girl is completely ambivalent to like everything that's going on. And so he's just trying to fit in with his buddies who are all, you know, making it with the girl. So he's trying to do what he thinks is expected of him. And she's just sitting there kind of ambivalent. Again, I think you're reading too far into the malicious nature of Gary's intentions. I think it's more a comedy of errors than a comedy of bad intentions.
I don't like if this
should
was
be Gary's lawyer, Kevin.
I think if this was anybody else, like if this was like Dean Cameron's character from Miracle Beach and like that scene happened and like he was like just a normal Joe like throughout the rest of this movie, I'd be like, all right, you know, I'll chalk that up to just playful fun. But the fact that he does all this other creep shit later, like, then I'm going to side on, you know, I'm going to err on the side of creepiness.
I hear you. I think it's a little more lighthearted than that, though.
I don't know. I think it's only lighthearted because they were playing, like, Cars songs during that scene. If they would have played, like, the theme from Serbian Film during the taking the girl's clothes off scene, then it would have felt a lot different.
You should re-edit that.
I think I will.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm kind of in the middle here. I do think it's funny, and I enjoyed this movie, but after hearing Parker's take on it, I will take those into consideration. I think that there's some merit in what he's saying, and I don't think it's intentional. I don't think that they set out to make this, like, super creepy kind of movie. I don't think that they were like, yeah, he's like Travis Bickle. But I think some of that's in there. I think maybe he's got a darker side to him, this Gary. But on a whole, I enjoyed this, and I would definitely check this out again. I do want to watch The Lemon Popsicle after here, because I read that when I was like looking up stuff about this, and I thought that was interesting, so I'm going to have to check that out. But
yeah,
I don't think this is a bad movie at all. I think it's a more realistic ending than a lot of, you know, teen sex romps. I think it's kind of true to life. But, I think it's interesting that, you know, out of all of these kind of goofy movies, this was like one of the only ones with that kind of, you know, quote unquote downer ending.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think this is essential viewing by any means. There's a lot of teen comedies that did a lot of things from this movie a lot better. You know, I think things like Fast Times at Ridgemont High dealt with a lot of this subject matter a little bit more realistically. I think things like Revenge of the Nerds were a little bit wackier. And I think things like, you know, American Graffiti and stuff had like better hangout scenes. But overall, if you like those kind of movies, I think you could have fun watching this. I think it's not the worst example of an 80s sex comedy in it. I think it has a lot to offer. Also, it's a canon picture, which I'm automatically, predisposed to enjoy on some level, just the fact that it's from the canon group. So, a little update, if you do like The Last American Virgin, Brett Ratner is planning to remake it. A remake of a remake.
Oh, Christ.
So, or to The Last American Virgin 2012, coming soon.
Starring Eddie Murphy.
Right, as all the characters. if you do like Last American Virgin and you're interested in checking out the original, check out that Lemon Popsicle on Netflix Watch Instantly. It's never been released on DVD in the United States. It does have a terrible dubbing job on the Netflix version, but, you know, if you can stand that and you like 50s music, it's worth a watch.
I looked it up on IMDb, and apparently there was only two movies that I know a boy's like was in: this and I Was a Teenage Zombie.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally with
that
you. Like, I feel like that
would be true.
I know. I feel like it was in everything, but according to IMDb.
I'll find out. I'll find out the truth.
Search WikiLeaks.
Right. All right, so that just about wraps it up for The Last American Virgin. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about Intruder from 1989, so stick around.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris-like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call in to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We are very lonely, and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now if you dare. Tell them that he sent you.
Arrest that woman!
Quaid.
Cut.
Get ready for a surprise!
We can't let him run around. He knows too much. They've got your bug.
I got a lock.
There! And the bug's in your skull.
Take this thing out of the case and stick it up your nose. Don't worry, it's self-guiding.
Got him.
I lost him.
Welcome to Mars.
You got a lot of nerve showing your face around here.
Look who's talking.
They erased your identity and implanted a new one.
If I'm not me, who the hell am I?
He's got a hologram!
Welcome to Johnny Cab.
Drive!
Where can I take you tonight? Please fasten your seatbelt.
I want Quaid delivered alive for re-implantation.
That's for making me come to Mars. You wouldn't hurt me. After all, we're married.
Consider that a divorce.
We hope you enjoyed the ride.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. First movie we'll be talking about is Total Recall from 1990. This is a movie that I've wanted to do forever because it's one of my favorite movies, but I've also been apprehensive about doing because it would most certainly be like the biggest movie, like the most mainstream or like the biggest blockbuster we've done so far. But I think that at the end of the day, it is about a secret agent that goes to Mars, that starts an alien reactor to save a race of mutants. And if you take the big money and the big stars out of it, it's exactly... that's exactly what this show is about. Also, the alien with the three boobs, or the mutant with the three boobs. So this is a movie I saw in the theater. My dad took me to see it. Usually my dad would take me to see a bunch of real shitty crap as a kid. Like, he took me to see Benny and June and, I don't know, just a bunch of, like, awful, horrible crap. And, like, my dad likes to push real shit movies on me. Like, one time I went down there, I was like 25 or something. I went down to Florida to hang out with him. And we had like this, sweet, like, beach hotel room, like, right on the beach, like, right by all these bars and stuff. And he demanded that we hang out, instead of like going out and partying in Florida during the summertime, that we hang out and watch, like, The Long Kiss Goodnight or whatever that Gina Davis action movie is with Samuel L. Jackson from 1997. And it was then that I realized my dad is bogus at movies, completely bogus. But this is the only time that we've watched a good movie together. And we saw it when it came out. I was like 9 or 10, I guess, and I just loved the shit out of it. I immediately ran out and got the latest issue of Cracked magazine, which had a parody of it, and I read that like a million times, and I was just all into this movie, so into this movie. And I've remained into this movie since. It's very good, one of my favorites. The movie itself is directed by a Paul Verhoeven, who has done some of the best things, including Showgirls, one of my other favorite movies ever, and Basic Instinct, RoboCop, Starship Troopers, which is awesome, other things. It's co-written by Dan O'Bannon, who did, Alien and Return of the Living Dead and all these other cool things. And it stars Arnold Schwarzenegger from Commando and Predator and all the other best things. So, I mean, if you can mix, like, a lot of the best stuff ever together, that's really what the aim of this movie was, I suppose, from a production standpoint. It's also based off of a Philip K. Dick story that I've never read and don't care about because I'm not into reading sci-fi stuff, but other people might be into that. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays Douglas Quaid. He's a regular schlubby kind of a guy in the future. He works at a construction place. He's sort of bored with his life. He wants to have adventure and excitement on Mars, which is being colonized at the moment. He's married to Sharon Stone, who is young and foxy, as opposed to being old and slutty, like she kind of is now. And so he goes to this place, Recall. He wants to get, memories of a vacation implanted into his head of going to Mars rather than just going to Mars in the future. They just give you the memories for free. And, not for free, I guess he had to pay, but they'll give you the memories. You don't actually have to go to these places, which sounds pretty awesome. He gets this package. They upsell him, like they always do. You go to the movie theater, you want a medium, they upsell you to the large. That's what they do here with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wants just some normal memories of going to Mars and hanging out, but they upsell him. They say, you can be a secret agent who goes and saves the planet and gets a hot chick and all this crazy stuff for only 300 credits more. He's upsold by the former Pepsi executive from Freaked, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I love that guy. So they upsell him. He agrees to this. Douglas Quaid then immediately freaks out. He thinks he's a guy named Hauser. He's going crazy. He needs to get his ass to Mars. He stumbles upon a scheme. His best friend tries to kill him. His wife tries to kill him. His wife calls Michael Ironsides in to kill him. Everybody's trying to kill this man. He's got to get to Mars. He's got to meet up with this hot chick. He's got to meet up with a guy with a real creepy mutant face who I just learned was Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, which blew my mind. He meets up with some midgets. He meets up with a friendly cab driver. Things go crazy. He's got to save this world from a Mr. Cohagen, who is, ridding the world, ridding Mars of its oxygen, killing off mutants. All this crazy, crazy stuff that I'm sure you're already aware of because everybody has seen this movie and everybody loves this movie. But yeah, I absolutely love this movie. I think it's, like I said, one of my favorites. And I figure this would probably be kind of a layup in terms of whether or not you guys liked it. But how do you guys feel about the Total Recall?
I had never seen this movie or even heard of it. But this was actually... No, I'm just kidding. I have watched this movie, 1,000 times. And it's always good. Paul Verhoeven... I'll say 98% of the time is pretty great. What's not to love about this? You got great effects. You have cool sci-fi stuff. Philip K. Dick. Great cast. Great sets. Great eye-popping effects. See what I did there?
Yes, sir.
Nice.
great papier-mâché third tits. Johnny Cabs, opening your mind to things. This movie's great. I have fantastic memories of watching this at sleepovers and with friends, and and quoting this endlessly and wanting to get my own ass to Mars and stuff. So picking this for the show at the same time seemed kind of crazy because it's such a huge movie, and also sort of seemed like a no-brainer because it's such a junk foody kind of movie. Like if I ever see this on TV, I'll watch the whole thing, no matter what point, I started at. It's a great midnight movie. It's a great anytime kind of movie. So this was great. I love revisiting this and there's nothing wrong with this at all.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. This is one that I've seen several times. It's a huge favorite of mine. At the time, I believe it was the biggest budget movie of all time. I think the budget of this movie was like $65 million. And they really utilize the budget well. I mean, it's one of those, sometimes you see movies and that have huge budgets and you're like, where the fuck did the budget go? I mean, this definitely, especially for 1990, really utilized the shit out of the budget. One thing, this is supposed to take place in like 2084 or something like that.
Almost there.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was pretty cool is they did, there was some pretty cool, technological stuff that we had never seen before. And some of it actually came to fruition, like the scanners that, see the skeletons, the flat screen TVs in the home, I don't know. There were some other things that I saw that were like, oh, that's actually kind of came to be.
Yeah. The
thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger pulls out of his nose.
The hologram tennis player reminded me a lot of like Wii stuff and stuff.
Right,
like Kinect.
Exactly. Yep. I did think of that as well, yes. This is great. I mean, the one thing that I did notice when watching this for the show, and people will probably hate this, but I would kind of thought while watching this movie probably would have been a lot better if somebody other than Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been in the lead. And don't get me wrong, like I like Arnold Schwarzenegger as much as the next guy, and he's great, and he's a total presence, and he works and things. But one thing that I never really got is, you in the beginning you described him as kind of like a schlubby Joe Everyman, and he's not. He's not Joe Everyman. He is an Austrian Superman, and it just, I don't know. I think I would have liked this movie if it was more of an everyman kind of guy. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger works great as a Terminator or as like these like real like over the top action guys. And this is certainly an over the top action role. But to me, I would have liked it a lot more if it was maybe someone a little less over the top, a little more schlubby. So I don't know. That would be my only complaint with it. Not to mention, in every movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger's in, he's, he's got the Austrian accent, and he's this big Superman, and a lot of times it's just never addressed. We're just, like, supposed to assume he's this average Joe, despite the fact he's got the crazy accent and the giant muscles, but, whatever.
You're not prejudiced against Eastern Europeans, are you?
Well, no. I just think it's funny because he's always supposed to be playing, like, an American, and they never address where the crazy accent comes in. But whatever. Yeah. That's a minor gripe. The special effects in this are awesome. I mean, just outrageously good. I remember just having my mind blown at some of the special effects. I mean, all the classic ones, the head scene, the nose scene, anything where the third tit, come on. Just anything where an additional body part is added or a body part
removed, and
you got to take into consideration this is 1990, so while some computers were used, it was mostly all practical effects, and for that, I mean, that alone, this movie deserves to be held in the highest regard. I mean, the special effects in this movie, the makeup effects, the set design is just incredible, the costume design, it's just magnificent. I mean, like I said, granted, they're working with one of the highest budgets in film history, so, fair enough. But nevertheless, it's just outstanding. And even by today's standards, even after, 20 years later, 20 plus years later, it still looks amazing, and it's great to watch. It won Academy Awards for Best Visual Effects, rightfully so. It was nominated for Best Sound Editing as well. And it definitely deserves those accolades because that in and of itself is great. But aside from that, it's not just a special effects jerk off. I mean, the story is good. It's very well done. The actors in it are great. You know, Sharon Stone, like you said, she's very foxy in it, very convincing. All the actors in it, I thought were good. And you're right. I mean, this could have been, they took a classic B movie storyline and gave it the biggest. It was like if somebody took Megaforce and said, here is $50 million. Go nuts. Or, you know, Star Crash.
But you're going to have to fire Bosley.
Right. But no, I mean, yeah, it's got all the classic sci-fi cult sensibilities with a giant budget, and it delivers on every front. It's a great movie, and it's one that I will watch, like Mark said, anytime it's on TV, I will watch it. I have the DVD, which I pop in all the time. One thing that's kind of a bummer, and I thought this too when I was watching Commando, is I got really into those Arnold Schwarzenegger soundboards prank calls, you know, like that people would make where they'd take the Arnold Schwarzenegger clips and make the prank calls, which was hilarious at the time, but it kind of sucks now because every time I go back and watch an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie and I hear one of those, you know, classic sound clips, like, oh, I don't know what were some of the ones from this, like, come on, don't bullshit me. Like, I can't help but just think of the prank calls. And it kind of takes me out of the movie for a second. So, but that's my fault.
Yeah,
anybody's.
I felt the same way. To go back to a couple of things you said, forever and ever when I watched this movie, like I was always like, yeah, Arnold, he's the only guy who could be in this role. He's the only guy I like enough to, you know, be in this one of the best movies ever. And lately, when I watched the movie, like the last few years, I always think that it could have been better with more of a schlubby fellow. It would make it more believable and make the two realities a lot more believable and stuff. And I guess before Arnold signed on, they had Jeff Bridges in the role. And then before him, it was Richard Dreyfuss. And I think those guys, I guess, would have been pretty cool. I mean, it would. On the other hand, it would have been really unbelievable for Richard Dreyfuss to kill a man with a drill. But... I think maybe a Bruce Willis would have been good, or a Jason Statham or somebody like that.
Well, Jason Statham.
Jason Statham was what, 14?
Yeah, he wasn't quite on the scene yet.
Yeah, but I mean, he's come on. He's Jason Statham. Are you going to turn him away just because he's 14? Come on, get real. To go back to the effects and stuff, this is the apex of practical effects and practical sets and everything like this. I think a few years after this, we'd have Terminator 2 and Jurassic Park, and then everything, people applying makeup and people making a real set, would go the way of the buffalo. And I think this is really where it, peaked, where the wave came to, came fully up onto the shore before rolling back. And I think that if computers were never invented, that movies, all your big budget like Avengers and stuff would be like this, and I think maybe that might be an all right thing because this looks great, and if people would spend the amount of effort, making effects like these rather than making effects like CGI stuffs, that they'd be really excellent right now. And it's sad to imagine a world where you can't do an Avengers movie practically and it look as good as it probably will.
I thought you were going to say you practically can't do an Avengers movie.
There are two actors in this movie that I fucking love. They have three lines each or something like this. Every time I watch this movie, I watch out for them because their overacting should win Oscars. There's a nurse lady in the recall place who she's telling Michael Ironside, I think, or no, she's telling the guy from Freaked, he's going crazy. And the guy's like, oh, don't worry about it. He's just acting out the implant that you gave him in his memory. We just have to subdue him. And she's all, that's impossible. We haven't implanted it yet. And then she throws something down and wipes her head, wipes sweat off her brow. And I really enjoy her overacting. There's another guy who in this scene where Arnold like sneaks into Mars and stuff and all this crazy stuff's going on and all these gateways are getting closed down. Michael Ironside says, we got to open these doors and, you know, track down Arnold Schwarzenegger. And the guy's like, we can't open these doors. They're all connected. And it's like another great piece of effect. Like he gets all on the guy's face and like starts huffing and puffing. Like it's, you know, and like that's the only time you see that character. There's no reason for him to be up in the face of the main villain of the movie. But I always like that guy. This movie uses the phrase mindfuck at one point, which now is sort of commonplace whenever you see a movie, you know, that's like trippy or whatever. People just go, oh, it's a mindfuck. That Inception's a mindfuck. You know, it's a mindfuck. Everything's a mindfuck. And I think that maybe this is the origin of that. It's at least the first thing.
This popped the mind's cherry?
I think maybe so. I don't think I've heard it before this movie.
Chris Angel's mindfuck.
To talk about the two realities in this movie for a moment, you know, there's, you can either go with this movie being completely real, that, you know, Douglas Quaid is actually a special agent, going to Mars and saving the planet, or everything's a dream. And, I was watching the commentary for it, and Verhoeven, it was with Verhoeven and Arnold, and Verhoeven was like talking about how each scene has like subtle hints, like one way or the other, you know, and things like this. And then Arnold, like, I don't even think that he realized that the movie could have it's all a dream, like reality to it, because like he kept saying stuff like, this is where you can really tell that it's not a dream and that everything's real. And like Verhoeven's like, no, 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 no. And I thought that was very funny. And then other than that, Arnold, as has become popularized lately, just explains exactly what's happening on the screen at any time. While Verhoeven is sort of talking about like the metaphysics and the symbolism of things, Arnold's just like, ow, I got kicked in the balls here. Now I'm grabbing a gun. Now I'm shooting the gun. Now I'm running. Now I'm shooting again. And it's very funny. That's my Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, by the way.
Yeah.
But seeing as to
that's
how this...
accurate.
Thanks.
So that's pretty accurate.
Thanks. Seeing as to how this movie is probably impossible to spoil, I want to ask you guys where you fall on the is it real or is it a dream thing of the movie.
I've always just assumed it was real, but I just never delved deep enough into it. It didn't seem like a movie that warranted me really analyzing it on that level. I don't know. I just always went in under the assumption it was real.
Yeah,
I'm pretty much the same way. It's still real to me, damn it.
Yeah, I always thought it was real because I mean, well, you know, I saw it when I was like 10, so I didn't read anything into it as I was like 10, and then even growing up, I was just assumed it was real. And then Arnold, of course, sort of his performance lends to it being real because he's like a Superman that you believe is, you know, a secret agent. But watching it like this time and like watching it lately and stuff. I guess maybe ever since I first saw Vanilla Sky, like I kind of am inclined to think that it's a dream. And, there's a scene where like he's first getting implanted, and I didn't even realize this until I watched it last night with the commentary. Paul Verhoeven pointed it out. Like, when they're trying to upsell him on this secret agent thing for $300 more, like they give away the entire plot. And I think that's really amazing. Like Verhoeven, like, was really amped up on it, like on the screenwriting of that. Because they say, you know, you go to Mars, you meet this hot girl, you meet aliens, and you save the planet, and you get the girl and all this. And, like, that's kind of amazing. Like, well, because it kind of lends to the dream aspect of it, because they're telling him exactly what's going to happen, and then it does. And B, like, it's amazing that you can give away your entire movie, and people still, you know, enjoy it and respond to it and don't go, oh, that guy just gave away the end of the movie. Let's get out of here. And, so like I said, I think that lends to the dreaminess of it. Also, one thing I never noticed until just this watching is that, the end of the movie, like everybody, you know, Arnold saves everybody, and, the movie ends with the sun coming up, and then the shot is engulfed with sunrise as the end shot. And I think that sort of lends to, being symbolic.
Like waking up out of a dream?
Yeah, yeah, to waking up and stuff like that. I think that's a cool metaphor for that. So I think after years and years and years, I now fall under the it's a dream camp.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I mean,
I mean, I can totally buy into that. But like you said, like since I watched this first when I was, you know, 10, 12, whatever years old, I'm inclined to think that it's, you know, totally real. And that this is going to happen to me at some point. So,
yeah. And I think that's the great part of this movie is that, I mean, yeah, you can watch it and be like, oh, two realities. Let's look deep into this, into the meaning of this. Or you can be like, oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a secret agent and he's killing people. And both ways are correct because both ways are awesome. And I think that's what makes this movie so great, apart from the mutants and stuff and the killing.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you were a little kid, which I was when, you know, this movie came out, Paul Verhoeven really was like the Willy Wonka of your of your deepest fantasies. Because, I mean, think about it. When you were a kid and he's like,
seriously,
he's like, hey, how about a robotic cop that just blows the fuck out of people? And you're like, oh, man, yeah, give it to
me.
Oh,
my God. Yeah, do it.
And like, what could top this? Like, how about Arnold Schwarzenegger going to Mars and meeting three-titted aliens? Like, oh, my God. What could possibly get better? You're like, hey, how about that hot chick from Total Recall? How about you see your beaver and making out with chicks and Basic Instinct? And you're like, Paul Verhoeven, stop. You're giving me way too much. Like, now I know what. That chick from Saved by the Bell that you always had a crush on, here's her naked. And you're like, oh, my God. Too much, too much. And he's like, giant bugs, naked chicks. And you're like, stop. My head. I can't take anymore.
Oh my God, it's too real. Yeah, the gospel. The gospel of Verhoeven.
Yeah.
Holy shit. yeah, Kevin, you just broke my brain.
But it's true, man. Yeah, Paul Verhoeven.
It's 100% true. Yeah, Paul Verhoeven tapping into the consciousness of our entire generation.
Junk Food Dinner is the number one cult movie podcast among really awesome cool people. Do you know it? We know it. Now we need iTunes to know it. Search iTunes for Junk Food Dinner. Then leave us a review telling the world how much you like the show. Cap it off with a nice 5-star rating. Then subscribe to our show to get the newest episodes as soon as possible. If everyone does that, we'll take the iTunes world by storm, gaining new listeners. If no one does that, Kevin, Mark, and Parker will die homeless and riddled with disease.
Hey guys, check this out.
One man team, what the fuck is that about?
It's a glitch, there is no BBK.
You don't know who or where this person is.
You don't just vanish into thin air, it's a fucking bowling alley for fuck's sake.
You can run everything fucking good!
I guess it's safe to say that BBK won this game.
Fuck the game!
Fuck BBK! And fuck this fucking bully ass!
Yo, this man's getting pretty fucking interesting.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. Up next, we have Gutter Balls from 2008. This is a movie that was recommended to us by listener Quentin Mode, who, you know, when he requested it, he said that this movie, you know, really hit him in the spot of, you know, a throwback to 80s slasher movies, a spot that Hatchet did not live up to, he thought, which instantly I found this guy to be soul-linked to me. And I knew that any man who would recommend us something while simultaneously denouncing Hatchet, I knew that we were on the same page. And then once I started watching this movie, I knew that we were not on the same page. this movie... you know, one of the things that make a lot of the old 80s slasher movies great is sort of this feeling of fun. I mean, even before Freddy started turning into the Wicked Witch of the West and superheroes and stuff, like, you know, even when he was still scary, things were still fun. You know, he would still go to a pool party and kill everybody there and have fun while doing it. Even if everybody else was terrified, Freddy was at least having fun. In this movie, it seems like nobody is having fun at all. The movie starts out real dark. It starts out with, like, hate crimes and rape. And that's no way to start out your movie, hate crimes. That's no way to, you know, get me on the side of anybody. I don't know.
Anyone.
Just, So after the beginning scene where, you know, a big fight breaks out in this very empty bowling alley that is obviously being used by people who work there after the place is closed down because there's only six people in it, our actors, or however many actors there are, 10. You know,
air quote actor.
Yeah. A big fight breaks out. And, you know, the guy who runs the place is like, all right, after this big fight where, like, two guys get, like, extremely beat up, like, broken bones and, like, an eyeball fell out almost and stuff like this, the guy's like, hey, you guys break it up, but remember to come back tomorrow night for the big tournament. Like, nobody would do that. They would just be like, all right, tournament's off if you guys are going to go around killing each other. But everybody comes back, you know. But before they come back for the tournament, the worst of these bad people, because as I've said, none of them are like enjoyable at all, like there's no good guy or like anything like that, the worst of these people commit probably the most horrific and unfun to watch rape I've ever seen in a movie.
There's fun rapes to watch.
Well, there's that one in I Was a Teenage Zombie. That was a wacky rape. That was fun.
Yeah, I guess that's so.
But yeah, I mean, we've watched a lot of horrible movies. I mean, not so much horrible, but unfun things to watch. We watched I Spit on Your Grave and Thriller. And I thought this rape scene was way worse than the stuff that happens in those. Because it's like in an arcade where everybody loves arcades. You just feel good to be in an arcade. But then this is happening there and it makes you real sad. And like, it's just like, I think like maybe the actors quote unquote actors signed up for this movie just so that they could quote unquote fake rape a girl. Like, they seemed too into it, and it wasn't their acting skill. They weren't good actors. They just I don't know. So that goes on for a very long time. About half of this movie is that rape scene, and then the tournament starts. There's only two really just two scenes in this movie. There's that opening scene and then credits, and then the rest of the movie, and they all happen inside this bowling alley. And then after that, slashing happens, and it's a big who's the killer kind of a thing, sort of. And
who gives a shit?
Yeah, that's basically the movie. When I first started watching this, like, the first half hour is just rape, so I was like, man, I'm real sorry I picked this, and I'm really going to have to apologize to those guys, because I know that those, you know, I knew that you guys weren't going to like this at all, being not fans of rape, as you are. And you know, so that happened.
You know us so well.
I've gained that intimate knowledge of you guys that I've deciphered that you guys do not like rape. That's not something you can tell about strangers. You have to be close. And then the movie kind of went on, and like some murders happened that I had never seen before. Some murders that just were also porn. I was very shocked to see like an anus showed up, like an actual anus was in this movie, and I was like, oh my god. But then immediately afterwards there was like actual sex. I mean, just shocked.
I felt like most of this movie was an actual anus.
That's probably true. And you know, so just because I started seeing things that I had never seen before in a movie, like I was like, all right, well, it's all right. And so I kind of got on board a little bit because of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of just crazy stuff. And then I kind of got on board a tiny bit more because there's a part where somebody gets their penis slit open. And I was like, that's the realest looking penis I ever saw. And then it kind of reminded me again of Thriller, where like they do the eye cutting scene and you're not sure if it's real. Is it fake? Like, and so I liked it on that level. I like, you know, if you've got gore and you're not certain if it's real or fake, then that's, I guess you've done your job, so I can appreciate that. Other than that, I mean, the only redeeming qualities of this movie are that things happen in this movie that I'd never seen before. And other than that, it's a big old piece of crap.
Yeah, I had seen parts of this movie when it first came out. My roommate, before he started living with me, I was over at his place, and he had it on. He had rented it. He had heard, like I think a lot of people, that this was, you know, this crazy over-the-top movie and that it was kind of an homage to the slasher films of the 80s. And I think that's kind of what draws a lot of people into this movie. is that, you know, they hear about all these over the top rape scene, and like it pushes the boundaries in terms of violence and sexuality. And, you know, a lot of those things are, you know, I think selling points for horror fans and things that they can get behind. But yeah, this is just absolutely terrible. I wasn't really paying attention to it when I saw it at my friend's house. We just kind of had it on the background as we were, you know, getting ready to go out and just we're doing other stuff. And so I just saw like bits and pieces there, and I was like, it looks okay, but I didn't really know anything about it. Watching it in its entirety for this podcast, it is just so bad. I mean, the actors, you hate every last one of them. They're just none of the most unlikable people you've ever met in your life are in this movie. And you just hate them all immediately. They're terrible actors, and they just seem like terrible people. And the dialogue is terrible as well. There's just every other line is, I mean, and I don't have anything wrong with, you know, profanity in movies, obviously, but it's like it's real. Every other line is like, you know, fuck, dick, ball, shit. It's like they were really, really trying hard to like be like edgy with their humor, and it's just like the most childish shit I've ever heard in my life. Like there's even one part at the beginning of the movie where that the manager of the bowling alley is like, you damn kids with all your fuck this and dick this. It's like, so they were obviously aware that they were going overboard with their ridiculous profanity laced dialogue, but they just went ahead and did it anyway. Yeah, that rape scene is just terrible and hard to watch. And like you mentioned, and I think this is important, I think the actors in that scene are way too into the rape. It's just something very unsettling about how into it that those guys were. And I really hope it was acting, but the fact that these guys couldn't act their way out of a paper bag does not lead me to that conclusion. But yeah, this movie is just terrible all around. I just hated it. I just hated everybody in it. I hated everyone that was involved with it. I just hate this movie. And I think that it sucks that people latch onto this movie because of, you know, they feel like it's a throwback to 80s movies because, like, you know, they use in the poster art for this, they use the picture from Maniac, and there's one like using the artwork from Halloween and stuff like that. And, you know, there's little references and homages throughout the movie to like Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween and 976 Evil and stuff like that. And it's, you know, I think people kind of will justify this movie in that way. They'll say, oh, you know, it's a throwback to all those 80s horror movies that you loved, but it's not. It's the worst of the last decade thrown into a blender. And, you know, I see a lot of really bad, low-budget, low-budget horror movies, and this is just one of the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah. I want all of our listeners to pay close attention, because this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. If anyone knows Ryan Nicholson, or if he's listening, I would challenge him to come on the show and try to justify this piece of shit as a film or anything. To say that it's a throwback to 80s slasher films is a disgusting slap in the face of any of those movies. There's nothing good about this. The lighting's horrible. The sound is horrible. The actors are horrible. The dialogue's horrible. The kills are retarded. The ending is awful. Hey, I'm going to ruin it for you guys. It's the guy that runs the bowling alley. And a couple of those jag-off kids helped him. This is absolutely a terrible excuse for a movie. Yeah, it's like all the like wannabe giallo references. There's nothing about this to like. I was like actually getting angry watching this movie, which I'm sure for some people is, oh, well, you got a reaction out of you. No, I'm sorry. Like it's like I'm angry because money went into this, like money that could have been funding stuff that is even a fraction better than this would be acceptable to me. So if you're listening to this and you haven't seen this, do not see it. You should watch Thanksgiving, which at least is fun. Or you should watch The Time Changer.
You should watch Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Bowl-O-Rama if you're looking for a bowling-themed horror movie.
Sure.
We should have done
that. Watch anything but this.
Yeah. I mean, like, everybody in this movie, if you just had to spend 90 minutes in a room with one of them, you'd want to kill yourself.
5 minutes in a room with one of these.
Yeah. But to spend 90 minutes with all these bastards in movie form is just...
Absolutely.
It's torture. Every actor.
Yeah.
It was so bad. I mean, and not bad in, like, a laughable, like, oh, it's such a bad actor. Like, that guy's a fucking douchebag.
Right. Yeah. Like, I would probably spit on the people in this movie if I saw them on the street. I hate this movie, and I hate that it has its head so far up its ass to, like, rip off the artwork from Maniac or Halloween or anything. Like, I know that you guys are from Canada, but come on, fucking get it together.
Yeah, it's God really
damn
bad.
Damn it, this is the worst thing ever. This is worse than any of the other movies that I've, like, gone on this sort of tirade about on the show.
To be fair, though, you were not here when we did Slapstick of Another Kind. So you might be singing a different tune if you're here that week.
That's true. I do still have that DVD, but after listening to the show, I decided not to watch it.
That's for the best. I did find there's a really foul-mouthed wax robot in this that I found kind of funny.
Nope. Sorry.
I like that guy, sort of. And then there's a scene where, like, one of the stupid kids is talking to the guy who runs the place, and, like, they're arguing about something. And... And then the guy's, like, so mad that he breaks one of those little pencils that you write the scores on. I thought that was kind of funny. But other than that, there's not too much. Like, I think they were, like, banking on the fact that, like, if they use the word cunt a lot, like, people would laugh and be like, ah, that's funny.
Right?
Yeah.
No, it's just uncomfortable. Like, this is just a rape fantasy for assholes is all this is. This movie is for the worst people.
Yeah, I was surprised when I looked up Ryan Nicholson. I was surprised to find out that he wasn't a 15-year-old juggalo, because that's who I would picture would make this movie.
Oh, Christ. No, he worked on Special Agent Cody Banks and shit, doing special effects, which, I'm going to be real, were not that impressive to me.
Now you've crossed the line talking shit about Special Agent Cody Banks.
Oh, no, I was talking about the special effects on this movie, but
okay.
The special effects in Cody Banks are second to none.
Yeah, for him to, like, be a special effects guy to make movies, you would expect... I mean, some of the gore was, like, pretty cool. Like,
His, like, special effects specialty were fake penises, because that's really where the budget went for special effects in this.
Yeah, that is
fake
true.
Penises and shitty blood.
Yeah, when the wax... when the wax robot polishes that guy's face off, though, I liked that. But it was, like, kind of weak, because you could tell, like, they were in, you know, like, they do this thing where, like, the wax robot, where, like, this huge bloody killing happens, is in a quote-unquote renovated room, or a room that's being renovated. So, I mean, that's their excuse for, like, putting plastic up everywhere, that way they wouldn't make a mess for when the real manager got to the bowling alley in the morning, and I thought that was, like, a lame cop-out.
The other scene that was exceptionally awful was when the worst of the worst dude, that Steve guy, gets his head bashed in. That looks like absolute garbage. When I was in high school, we had to make a fake mold of my head for some play that we did, and that looked better than this movie. You hear me, Nicholson?
Yeah, I was actually talking to professional podcaster Mike Dick about this movie.
Ooh.
And he had seen one of this guy's other movies and was surprised that we were doing it and stuff, and said that if this movie is anything like his other movie, that it is going to be way worse than Serbian Film, which I agree with. Like, the things that happen in this movie aren't as bad as the things that happen in Serbian Movie, probably, like, in terms of just reading it on paper. But, I mean, at least Serbian Film, which we'll be talking about in 2 weeks, is a competently made film. And this, like...
Yeah, this looks like it was made with a phone.
Yeah, yeah. And not even like an iPhone, like a chocolate. Like,
right. Yeah, I mean, seriously, 10 minutes in is the most horrific and disgusting rape scene I've ever seen in a movie. And then not for another 30 minutes does anyone get killed. It's mostly just people saying fuck and faggot and cunt and then trying to get a beer. That's most of this movie. And then this little, like, computer noise when BBK kills somebody. Fuck this movie forever.
What else is there? There's a scene like the the scene that you have to naturally have when you do a movie like this, where the two people who are left, who aren't dead, like, are running around finding all their friends. And there's a scene where, like, they find this one guy, and, they're like, hey, it's that bigot-ass Patrick. And I thought that was I didn't find it funny within the confines of the movie, but I think that anytime I find a dead body now, and we're like, hey, it's that bigot-ass Patrick. Because it's funny to it's funny to exclaim that a dead person was a bigot in that life.
Right. I hope that's on a tombstone somewhere. Here lies bigot ass Patrick. And I can't believe, because I really liked Retribution, that we've spent more time talking about this than we did about a movie that I actually liked.
Right, yeah, it's a lot easier to...
That's true.
But, I agree on all fronts. This is just a terrible movie. Don't waste your time. Don't let morbid curiosity get the best of you, like I think a lot of people who have seen this movie have. You know, it's not worth your time. And you'll realize it very quickly if you do, in fact, rent this.
This movie, though, Quentin is right in that it is better than Hatchet Part 2. And we're going to take a quick break on Junk Food Dinner, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for joining us to relive these precious memories. We'll be back next week with a Don Coscarelli theme show to kick off the new year as we discuss Phantasm, Bubba Hotep, and John Dies at the End. In the meantime, find the archives at junkfooddinner.com or iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, and review the show, which helps new listeners find the show. You can also find us on Stitcher Radio, facebook.com/junkfooddinner, and on Twitter at junkfooddinner. Thanks for listening and supporting us. See you next week.
There's just more of everything. More Julian Sands, literally. His peen is in this. Got that big Julian Sands peen that and everything like that. This is an adult word. That Julian Sands, that Adonis coming through, just the Cadillac of men coming
Good
through naked.
Lord.
Naked is the day he was born. Just beautiful looking, this man. His naked form, the way God made him. Gorgeous.